Jesus. You don't know comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks. Welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. For those of you who are joining us for the very, very first time, welcome aboard. I am delighted you're here. I'm delighted to be here, and I think you will be too. And I hope you make a habit out of it. It's a great habit to get into. I think it was a couple of weeks ago, maybe it was last week. Anyway, I mentioned that relative to some crop circles over in the UK, that there had been a report from a policeman that he had witnessed extremely tall beings in a field near Silbury Hill in Wiltshire, England. And that's near these crop circles. Since then, I've had several requests for updated information. I really don't have any updated information other than there is some information that I got off of a blog today. It's ufoblogger.blogspot.com. And anyway, I went looking for updates, and this is the most that I could find. And it says, it repeats what Colin Andrews had informed everyone of back on Monday, July the 6th, and then about the policeman saw these beings. Now, the details of the report are that this police officer saw three tall beings near a crop circle at Silbury Hill. And he claims that that he had a close encounter, a very close encounter with these beings, and that they were 8 to 9 feet tall, and that it was north of Silbury Hill in Wiltshire, England. According to the information, he was visited by three government officers, and it doesn't say what kind, but three government officers who produced a book of sketches of different ET beings. So they had in their possession a book with sketches of these ETs and asked him to pick out what looked the most like what he saw. And at least two agencies were allegedly involved with this. One interesting detail I did not have is that there was a report in that same area about 2.5 years ago of a woman that was driving on the highway near that same area. And she saw a very tall being, 7 to 8 feet tall, that came out of a gateway from a field. And then as her car passed by, it reacted as though it was very, very frightened. It jumped back. And I said it took place about 2.5 years ago. It was about 3 years ago, but it was near this same area. That's all the information I've got on that to update you with, but for those of you hungry for that information, I hope it helped. My guest this evening is Colonel X, Ben Woods. We'll be back with my guest right after this break. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is known to many of you as Colonel X. And he's been on our show before, and we introduced him as Colonel X. I asked him just before the show if he wanted to wanted me to refer to him as Colonel X or use his real name. He said either way, so let me introduce to you tonight Colonel X, under his real name, Ben Woods. And, Ben, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Well, great. It's really nice to be back, Mr. Smith. Just so your listeners know, some people will often say, Colonel X, what the heck is going on? What is Colonel X, or who is Colonel X?
Mm-hmm.
And just so they know right off the bat that they're talking to someone in the know. In 2007, in the summer of 2007, I had done some research with the Disclosure Project out here in Nevada and Dr. Steve Greer, and we had actually tracked one of the infamous Nevada discs, and he was able to leave Nevada with some of those photographs. But I was able to keep one, and I had leaked it to UFO Magazine and the editor Nancy Burns, and ever since then I have been called Colonel X, as given to me by the editor, Ms. Burns. She decided to call me Colonel X, and from then I've been doing research off and on, and debuting tracking photos when we're able to get them.
Okay. Now, I think in your previous appearance here, I asked this question, but let's do this again for those who are new. Are you an actual colonel?
And yes, that is a very popular question. It's a question that I find that the researchers who really want to get something done and are really serious about doing the research really and got absolutely positively know, and the answer is yes. Before coming to Nevada, I was with the Air Force, and I did a lot of work in the service, and I know reporters like to probe and dodge for information about knowing exactly what I do, but I try and stick to the photographs and providing them the information that they are looking for. I try and stay away from the specifics about my job, and I think we touched on, we absolutely had to know what base, or everyone wanted to know what base I worked at. Was it Nellis, or in what I did in the Nellis test range? And it's Indian Springs.
Mm-hmm.
I work near Indian Springs, and everyone was happy with that.
Well, Indian Springs is under the control of Nellis.
Yes.
I mean, as far as I know, unless they've changed
every single Air Force base in and around the Nellis test range reports in and has to be held accountable to the main base commanders. But that's where I work, and in 2007, one of my friends had come across something interesting, and we decided to go out on our own and investigate. We have our own equipment. I know a lot of military guys have their own equipment at home, night vision and things like that. And we decided to use some of it, and we actually found where the saucer was being tested. And we gave that information to Dr. Steve Greer, and he came out and he did some research, and it was really exciting. I had a lot of fun.
All right. Now, just as a side note, Indian Springs is the base at Indian Springs is where Charles Hall was based, and he's the one that has written so much about he was a weather observer, and that out on the going to all the weather posts that he had to go to and do his readings, that he ran into aliens that inhabited a base that was out at Indian Springs. Do you know anything about that other than
no,
what
no,
you
I
hear from Charles?
About that. I think that was I think we had touched upon that last time also, that something at Indian Springs had happened and you'd asked about it, and I didn't quite know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
But
so you never ran into those?
That was last mm-hmm. November, I think, November 17th that we did that.
I believe it was.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, so what's been going on since then? What have you gotten yourself into? Any good UFO stories that you've been able to...
Every night. Good stuff every night.
Good stuff every night.
Every night. But why not do this. Bring us up to speed on what you've been involved in since November the 17th.
Okay. Well, since November the 17th, I haven't gotten into too much stuff, and I'll tell you why. Once you hit December... In January, those months are pretty dead as far as activity with most of the security, because it's the holidays, November uh-huh. and December. You get into the holidays, everything's skeleton crew. No one wants to do anything that's too dangerous. I was still sort of popular from the work in 2007, and Rob Simone from the headroom and the RobSimone.com radio show had contacted me. After that show, and he wanted me to appear on the International UFO Conference Laughlin 2009 DVD with him. He was one of the co-sponsors of the conference, and he wanted me to provide him with some stuff. And can I go out on the DVD? It was really exciting. And lately, Mary Sutherland from Burlington News has asked me to appear as her VIP guest at the dinner at her Vortex conference in October. And I had a couple of other opportunities and things going on. We had some producers that wanted to produce something for the History Channel and Bill Burns. And Bill Burns tried to schedule me for the History Channel, as a matter of fact. And what I learned through that experience is getting the saucer to come out when the History Channel is there is like... putting thread through a needle. No one is available at the same time. There's no way to really do it at the same time.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun trying to schedule.
All right. Now, you talk about tracking this flying saucer or this disc. Now, what do you mean when you use this term tracking?
What do I mean when we use the term trapping? Well, that is a good question. When I say, you know, a lot of people that listen to the UFO radio programs and that go online and read about UFOs, they're all pretty, you know, in the know on stuff like tracking or go out and camping and scouting for UFOs. So I've never really had to explain it to any great extent. But what we do is we have some tracking cameras that we were able to pick up from the Meade Telescope Corporation. I'm sure everyone is familiar with the Meade Telescope Corporation. They make mm-hmm. Telescopes, and they make cameras so that you can see Venus, Mars, things like that, and far-out galaxies. So we use the good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we custom-built lenses and attached lenses onto the Meade CCDs, and we position them. At first, when we first started doing this, we had an approximate area. We had some radar data, and we had an approximate area. But these cameras are pretty good. They go out 80 miles in either direction, wherever you're pointing them. You can get them to penetrate 80 miles into the airspace. So it didn't take us long. It took us about 2 weeks before we were able to actually find it for the first time. But we place the cameras in the area where we receive our data, and we pan around. We start, you can split the sky up into ribbons or sections, and you start to the left or to the right, which if you're left or right-handed, you just start the camera at about 40 degrees, and you go all the way across. Then you raise it 10 degrees, and then you start scanning again. Then you raise it 10 degrees, and you scan it again, and you raise it 10 degrees until you hit it. And it depends, really, on what type of test they're doing, too. If they're doing hover, if they're testing for hover, if there's a hover test of any kind, you're able to find it doing that. But if they're not testing hover, this thing is really zooming by, and you almost absolutely have to know just about at what altitude it is to be able to see it, but we are able to get it.
All right, now let's back up just a little bit. You were in the military. You were stationed out at in the area of Indian Springs, Nevada. And how is it that you came across this this craft? I mean, were you looking for it? Had you heard about it and went looking for it, or was it an accident?
No, I mean, when I came out to Nevada, I was, you know, I was always a little interested in UFOs, but it's something that you really don't bring up too much or talk about in front of the men, because it puts a black mark on your record if you're reported that you're looking for UFOs, because it goes under a psychiatric evaluation type thing. Mm-hmm. if you're really, you know, in the military. But essentially what happened was, you know, I have a lot of friends around the base, and one of the radar operators happens to be my friend, and he tells me, he goes, well, there's something going on over at about 1 a.m. over in this sector. And I go, yeah, so what? And he goes, no, well, you know, it's about once a month. They put everything on a really high alert, and I know something's going on out there. You guys, you know, have you guys heard anything? So it was something like that is gone. Have you heard something? Because I've heard something. And I go, no, I haven't heard anything. Have you heard something? And we went out to go check it out, you know, and there it was.
When you say there it was it on the ground?
No, it was actually in hover.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what we had shown to the Disclosure Project.
Okay, now what does this craft look like?
Well, if you go to the website at www.secretetsaucers.com, we have some of the photos there. And these particular photos are not just your ordinary photos. They are tracking photos, but they were specially collected for a scientist out of SETI. And we'll get into talking about him in just a couple of minutes. But we put, I think, 3 tracking photos up there for everyone to look at. And it's just, it looks, what they term this, what the term for this type of saucer is a shoe heel saucer, because it resembles the heel of a shoe. There's actually some structural characteristics that are strictly for and to identify this type of saucer, because it is a famous saucer, by the way. In 1947, there was 2 major saucer incidents before Roswell. I'm sure you know all about this. The first one is Kenneth Arnold.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Is that right, Mount Rainier?
Right.
And he had 9 flying discs. And then the second one, I think, was the day before or a couple hours before Roswell. And you're in hometown, by the way, Phoenix. You're in Phoenix, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it was William Rhodes. No one knows his name, but they know the photos. I mean, if you're in UFO, you go online, if you're involved with UFO at all, you've got to have seen the William Rhodes photo, and it's the phantom disc and has the little streak in the corner, the two-pointed trailing, the two-pointed rear of the rear end has 2 points, and has the rounded front, and has the cutout circle, and there's a circle on the top that they say is the dome or the cockpit for the alien pilot. It's one of those, and you can see one of the photos on the homepage, and we also have placed some additional photos throughout the website, and you can browse the website and see them there.
Well, Ben, when you started... you know, you went out there, you found this thing in hover, you took some photographs. These photographs, at least one of them, made it to UFO Magazine. You're in the military at that point, and, I mean, weren't you afraid that this was going to come down on you like an anvil?
Oh, yeah, that's why we don't do this a lot. Mm-hmm. I only do this when it's going to be a really big benefit, and... yeah, you're right. It is scary out there. I mean, at first, it's, you know, one of the questions I've been asked is, what did it feel like when you saw that saucer for the first time, or what does it feel like? You know, and as a matter of fact, one of the questions that the Mutual UFO Network has on their report forms is, what did you experience when you had seen the saucer? Were there anything, emotions? Were you crying, or was it like seeing the 8th wonder of the world, which I think it is, or it's about to be a wonder of the world. If it's ever officially brought down, it'll become one of the wonders of the world. I think it's written up as that. But when you first saw it, you kind of drop your mouth, your jaw drops, and you look at it, because it's flying like nothing you've ever seen. It's nothing like conventional flight of a jet or an airplane or a commercial airliner is just hovering, and it's very quiet. Just, I mean, if you don't look to your right and see it, you would never even know it there. It's there. The engines are so darn quiet on this thing. You can't. It's amazing. And I think some of the Disclosure Project researchers were doing the same thing. It's just like watching a ghost or something. And you do that for about a couple of minutes, and then you start looking around for the people that are protecting it, because you know you're in big trouble for seeing it. Yes, that is one of the big things that comes into play about 2 minutes after the sighting or after you're there. You know you shouldn't be there. It's amazing.
Yeah, but what about in releasing the photo? I mean, weren't you concerned that that was going to create a lot of problems for you?
At first I was concerned, and but nothing happened. As a matter of fact, we have a mini DVD digital download on the website, and if people have their PayPal accounts, they can pick one up. They're only $1.99. We talk about submitting this information over to the FBI, and we supplied them with a CD, and we put some tracking images on it, and we let them see it fly, and the special agent in charge of the Federal Bureau of Investigation here in Las Vegas got back to me. And the only thing he did was he just gave me his, he confirmed his contact information and said, go ahead and send your package over. And I go, okay, and I sent it, and then I sent him an additional one. Nothing. They didn't even care.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. It's, I guess, after the Blue Book conclusion, which is that UFOs are a form of mass hysteria by the American people, or misidentification of conventional aircraft. Those are the two conclusions that are given by the Air Force. That's it. Hello?
Yeah. That's what they say.
Okay, I got to put some time on my card real quick, but I'll be right back, okay?
All right.
All right, it's only taking me a second. Hold on.
All right. Well, this is obviously interesting, an interesting situation where you have an Air Force colonel releasing information about a UFO that is doing tests at an air base that's pretty highly restricted out at Indian Springs. And one of the questions that I want to ask, and one of the questions that I hope we got an answer to, is whose is it? I mean, is this thing extraterrestrial, or is this thing is it something we built? And, you know, if it is extraterrestrial, who's flying it? Are there aliens flying it? So I'm hopeful that Ben will be able to answer these questions for us. I'm very hopeful that he'll be able to. I know he knows the answers, but.
Okay, you there?
Yep. But the question is whether or not he can answer those questions. I know he knows the answers, but we're going to find out now. Ben, whose is it? Is it of extraterrestrial origin, or is it ours?
Is it of extraterrestrial origin? Well, believe it or not, Mr. Smith, there are two questions that I've been on this project for about 23 months,
mm-hmm.
Ever since last July, last June. And I've talked to a lot of ufologists, and I've got a lot of consulting, and the two questions that are asked the most, and I'm sure you're going to ask them here tonight, and I'll be able to answer both of them to some extent. The first one is, are the aliens flying the craft?
Okay, that was going to be my second one.
That was going to be your second one.
Yep, tell you what, hang on, because we have to take a break. When we come back from this break, we'll continue, and we'll pick up right there and get the answers to these questions. We'll be back, folks. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Okay, the two questions, who's flying it, and is it of extraterrestrial origin? And, Ben, I had to cut you off. The mic is yours, sir.
Okay. Well, like I said, this is just about one of the top two questions that I'm asked. When the researchers are collecting their information, or they're going to be using this for a reference. They, you know, they try and find out as much as they can. And one of the things they want to know is the craft of ET origin. Send me an email and ask, how do you know it is of extraterrestrial origin? And the glimmer of hope in their eyes is if they've trekked across the Mojave Desert and ran out of food and water, and one of the last things they do is they ask, is it of extraterrestrial origin? And, well, they can't touch it to determine if it resembles any materials used by the Air Force. But in 1947, the Air Force, and again in the 1960s, state that this style of craft is not in existence. So we're looking at something that does not exist. Planes with this shape do not exist, and then they hang up the phone on you. So essentially, where does it come from? I was able to go out one time last year, and that was to train a new team who was here in Nevada, and I'll keep the lead investigator's name confidential for now. It may come out next month, though, because we have a lot of things going on, and we'll talk about those later. But, you know, he got a little scared when he'd seen it, but he knew it wasn't an ordinary craft. You know, they just don't fly like that. And I say that over and over again because these people, these eyewitnesses that report these craft, boy, you really don't know what they're talking about unless you've actually seen one. When they say it's nothing like they've ever seen, or it whished by, and when I saw it, I really got scared. When I took the research, you know, I take guys out there to train them, and we're getting ready for something for the end of the month or next month, you really understand why these guys are reporting it like this, because it really is, like, defying physics as we know it. I mean, when you throw a ball and it follows the projectile motion, you can tell it's going to fall and everything else, and this thing, it's like frozen there, and it's really neat. But the researchers are quick to jump to the conclusion that it's a reverse-engineered ET craft because there's no way for them to actually touch it and prove it, and it absolutely cannot be one of the actual 1947 saucers because the American people have been told by the media that Area 51 is a reverse engineering facility for anti-gravity propulsion. Now, I am not saying it is a reverse engineer. Like I've discussed before, it's the ufologist's job to determine that, but I am just making available a series of photos of it being test flown, and I have a couple of new researchers trained, and I have a couple of really top head ufologists that are on the scene, and we'll be talking about those two later, Dr. Seth Shostak, and I've gotten involved a little bit with Robert Bigelow's project over at SIP. Now, it's been 60 years since the... And I'm going to leave it to them to determine if it's of extraterrestrial origin or not. But if you want my personal opinion...
Yeah, I do.
On my personal opinion, it's been 60 years since the Air Force excluded the public sector from ET and its 1,200-mile-per-hour craft. And I'm not too hopeful that the Air Force is going to land it, and the Air Force is unwilling to provide help to those trying to uncover the saucer program. And it sounds pretty sound when these researchers say, well, it's not a 1947 saucer. It's been too long, 60 years. It still can't be flying. You know, it's an assumption on their part, but it's a good one. I mean, not a lot of things last 60 years. But
I would think anything that can fly all the way across the universe to get to us probably could.
Yeah, that's where I'm at with it. But if it's a pilot flying this, he's got to be the most secret man in the entire U.S. Air Force. You know what I mean? I mean, when we had to test pilots back in the war, everyone knew who they were. They just didn't know what they were testing. They knew they were testing something. But, you know, getting this pilot out into the desert and having him fly this and then getting him back out is pretty difficult. He's got to be really super secret. And
well, and the support staff, the support personnel for that craft, however many there are, would have to be super, super secret.
Yes, exactly. So it's something that they've kept since the war and used that particular security classification to keep it a secret, because trying to establish a program, say, now, say if something crashed like that now in 2009, would be impossible. It would crash, you'd have to get those new security personnel, there'd be no way to pull them out of the current military scenarios and situations that exist in the United States today and get them into a program like that where no one sees them leave and come and go like that. So, yeah, but...
So you're of the opinion, I take it, that it is of extraterrestrial origin.
Yeah, I think it is, and the reason I think it is because this thing flies like nothing else. I mean, there's... Even if it's a reverse engineered, it's flying like E.T. designed it, just like he designed it, because I know nothing that we have flies like that.
And okay, so who do you think would be flying it?
Who would be flying it? Mm-hmm. That's, again, the other popular questions. Who is flying it? Are the aliens flying the craft? Well, again, this is a question 90% of all the abductees would, of course, confirm is yes. I mean, when they see the saucer and they're on the ground in the woods, in the water, at sea, or along any of the desert highways, and it comes down and blinks its lights. None of them have ever asked if the aliens weren't piloting the craft. They've never even reported that a human has been piloting the craft. I've never heard of anyone saying that the aliens were not inside. But now, because we are taking these tracking photos near the Air Force test area, it could be piloted by a test pilot. I mean, it could be. It'd be the only one, though. Out of the 15,000 reports that were turned into MUFON last year, I would be the only one reporting there's a human pilot inside this one. But now, 100 years ago, there was no such thing as flying saucers, engines capable of interstellar travel or alien pilots. But now they're everywhere, but with very little scientific basis for their existence. There's plenty of eyewitness testimony to confirm that something extraordinary flew over the United States in 1947. And
Let me make an observation about that before we go any further. I agree with what you just said, that there's very little scientific evidence, but lots of eyewitness testimony.
Yes.
But do you know how many millennia went by before there was any scientific evidence or scientific explanation for how birds fly? And yet, birds were flying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just because we don't understand it doesn't mean it's not real.
Oh, of course. And on that mini-DVD digital download, I provide a couple of examples of UFOs that had turned up in Renaissance art.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't have any type of a flight back then, and you see these little men huddled in these little spheres, and they're cruising across Venice, Italy, or wherever the art was painted. And I provide a couple of examples. So they've been around, but... like you said, science didn't develop, but when science started developing, we ran out of proof for these type of aircraft. But one witness, and I envy you a little bit, because I haven't been able to really make the trip to Phoenix to go check out where William Rhodes lived and what he was actually looking at. And he did leave us with some information about what direction the craft had come down and which way it had left and gone back into the clouds. And he was able to provide us with two photographic negatives, but the chances of an authority arriving on the scene and seeing what he had seen are pretty slim. But the Air Force is good at it, which is hiding the program. They've been able to fly and test the craft over the past 6 years and keep the American people out of the test range. But yeah, you have a really nice opportunity down there because that's where all the action first started. You got the Phoenix lights there also.
We see things in the skies here frequently, very frequently. All right, now, you said that your opinion, and you're stating it as an opinion, but your opinion is that it is of extraterrestrial origin. I'm not sure that I understand what your opinion is about who's flying it. Is it your opinion that it would be an extraterrestrial flying it?
Well, like I said, my opinion is on this that it could go either way. If you believe the extraterrestrials are here, and you're it depends on who I'm talking to. I can go either way on it, but there's no way for me to actually know. But I'll tell you a little bit. Like I was saying, if you're a proponent of the reverse engineering theory, which is a good theory, because we're out here in Nevada, so you're obviously going to see things like that out here. We have Robert Bigelow, who's got his new organization here, who's just built it to set up to reverse engineer his own data and evidence that he's going to be trying to pick up and put it into his commercial line of craft that he's putting into space. So he's reverse engineering, and we have guys that they say are reverse engineering within the test range. So if I'm talking to someone like that, you know, it could be a human pilot, and the very reason is what you had brought up. It's very difficult to hide these people when they're working in and around this test range, and they're coming into Las Vegas, and they're coming down, they're going into the gate. You have a lot of people watching for people coming in. They don't use dumb people to work out here. Men that work on these saucers went to Harvard. Mm-hmm. They went to MIT. They have brilliant careers. They don't hire stupid people to work on saucer, so it's very difficult to hide them. The only way you can hide someone like that is by saying he's working on something else, and then when he gets into the building, he gets into the elevator and goes underground and starts working on the saucer. That's the only way. And the only type of clearances that do that are nuclear and the clearances from World War II. Now, if you're a hard proponent of aliens, and that you're convinced aliens are here, and there's lots of evidence that they are, and the U.S. government gave these aliens this super clearance that they had stored away for World War II, the people that came back and that are working on weapons from World War II and all the wars, and they gave the aliens, then that's a possibility. I mean,
well,
they have a place to keep these scientists, and they could be using this place to keep E.T.
Well, that was my point. My point is whether it is being piloted by extraterrestrials or whether it's being piloted by humans, either way, the level of secrecy and security that would be necessary would be exactly the same either way.
Yes, exactly. So it depends on what you believe in. I would think, after being in Nevada, I would say it could go either way. There's no way for me to tell, because they have the security level here. Mm-hmm. For nuclear technology and for spy plane operations. They bring these guys in from MIT and the aeronautics universities, and they come in, and where they go, you don't know, because no one's cleared for that type. Not a lot of people are cleared to see those men and where they go and what they work on. So, and there's a lot of people. So you can very easily sneak someone in and have them fly that, but he's got really, really good clearance. As for extraterrestrials, they got to be kept out there, and they can have that same type of clearance where only a select few can see them and work with them, and that clearance is available.
Charles Hall, I mentioned him earlier, says that they have a base up on the side of the mountain, of a mountain, at the end of a valley. And I wish I could be more specific. He names which valley. And he says that it is an extraterrestrial base provided by the U.S. Air Force. And that they have several types of craft. And one of the interesting things that he talks about is that they made these monthly trips. And you're talking about them about once a month, doing these tests. We have to take a break. We'll be back, folks, right after this, so don't go away. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. My guest this evening, Colonel X, Ben Woods. Ben, you mentioned having an association with SETI. What is your association with SETI? What involvement have you had?
Okay, well, this summer is already half over, but I have an extensive mailing list that is built over the past 24 months that includes ufologists, producers, editors, and investigators from around the country, Before the start of the summer's expeditions to the test area, we had selected our top candidates who we felt could make an impact with the media if we took them out to see the disc. And in May, it was still kind of early. We were trying to determine who we're going to be using. But these candidates turned out to be Dr. Seth Shostak of SETI, Robert Bigelow and his BAASS organization, Bigelow Aerospace Advanced Space Studies, which we were pre-approved by his chief of investigations at SIP, Richard Lang. He's we can talk about him a little later in the second hour. And although I cannot get an actual piece of the saucer out of the test area, I can get them close enough to see it. And getting Dr. Shostak, now, that was, he's a pretty prestigious individual who wanted to start looking into the saucer and what I could deliver. He had just put out his book, Confessions of an Alien Hunter, and if you go online and start hunting for saucers and you're just getting into it, I come up. And I had been put in touch with Dr. Shostak through a friend of his who said that he might be interested in just seeing a little bit about what I could deliver again. And Robert Bigelow may be what I'm leaning on here for the beginning of August, and I'll touch on this again a little later, and it's also on the mini-DVD digital download. And I've been contacted by ABC News affiliate station here in Las Vegas about the release of the SETI radio program photos. Dr. Shostak essentially will be doing the evaluation probably in about 2 weeks.
Okay, so he's going to be evaluating photos of something that he saw with his own eyes.
Not yet. That is all on the table. What I anticipate is, this is what I anticipate out of getting these photographs for Dr. Shostak, and I'm going to go into some detail here in just a minute about this. We're going to be showing the disc to either a Bigelow representative and allowing him to issue a media statement, or we're going to be showing it to Dr. Shostak. One of those two things is going to be happening either this month or next month. These test dates are tricky, and when you're dealing with these corporate UFO hunters, they're very busy, and setting up these schedules is very difficult. We had plenty of people like Mr. Cliff from MUFON. There were actually another couple of MUFON researchers and some overseas interests. But with Bigelow checking in and putting a call out with his Bigelow Aerospace Advanced Space Studies and Dr. Shostak looking more towards the craft as evidence of a signal. I don't know if you've gone through that line of research. Well, I got on the horn, and you know, it's pretty exciting. Without the Roswell incident, there would be no SETI. Have you ever thought of that, by the way?
I used to be a big fan of SETI, and I'm not an opponent of SETI now, except that I wonder why they're searching radio waves for radio signals when radio would be way too slow if these things are passing through wormholes to get here.
Yeah, and so I think what the idea is over with with Dr. Shostak is, if you can find this saucer, you know, that crashed, that started all of the paranoia in the United States, and where everyone started getting interested in UFOs, and then came SETI, and then came what Dr. Shostak has to do over at the Institute with all these radio antennas. You know, he, of course, became interested in saucers, and I contacted him at the request of his friend. I had sent them some email, and, we have confidentially collected, at their request, some tracking photos to be reviewed by SETI astronomer Dr. Seth Shostak this August. And again, a friend of his had contacted me, and he was certain he would want to see some of this.
Why are these test flights happening? What is it they're testing?
That is a good question. Now, 24 months ago, Mr. Smith, I had no idea what the heck these guys are doing. I saw this thing come by at a spectacular speed. The only other things that I have seen go this fast are meteors, and just as quiet. I mean, when you see a meteor going by, it just it hits, and you see the streak, and it's all over. It's gone. It's just whisked by you that fast, and you didn't hear a darn thing because, of course, it has no engine, so it's just going through the air. Same thing with these discs. These things, they start off, and, you know, they start off at one end of the test range, and before you know it, they're already over on the other side. And they're very quiet. So unless you're exactly looking at where they're testing it, you don't even see it. But whether we're going to be able to get Dr. Shostak to come out to see it is going to be a question. It's going to require a lot of planning. It's going to require a lot of coordination. I think I've collected enough photos that he's going to be able to, I mean, anyone that studies UFOs and that is very serious, I mean, knows the photos are real. I mean, I could get them, you know, turn the photos over to them and let them play with them and do whatever they want. The point is, I have them. And when you see it, you look at it and you go, I mean, everyone I show it to, they go, wow. And they go, you know, you have it. And I go, yeah. So I've collected enough of them to reassure them that I can show it to them. And Dr. Shostak is currently hosting the SETI Are We Alone radio program, where they discuss SETI topics and objectives. This is where I had initially contacted his office and made friends with the program's assistant producer, Barbara Vance. Mm-hmm. And they wrote that they did not ordinarily investigate flying saucers or reversed engineered technologies, but to send something over so they could have a look. And, well, the people at the SETI community over there are really big on helping each other out. And they have the SETI at-home program. Have you ever heard of it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've tried it out. And, well, you know, the guy sends over to get some stuff over to get him some stuff, and that's what he's about to start looking at this craft as being the start of something over there. Whether he's going to wants me on the radio program, or whether he wants to come out and check it out himself, it's one of the things on my research list.
So, all right. Well, what about Robert Bigelow now? We'll have to do that when. Well, we've got time. We've got time. I think you'll have to make it pretty quick. Has he seen the photos? Has Robert Bigelow seen the photos?
I've got Robert Bigelow's package ready, and I was going to talk about that also. We have a three-step procedure that we're doing with Robert Bigelow. Step one was to get the photos evaluated by his head researcher and confirm that they're eligible to be considered for Robert Bigelow. And then I've called his office and his headquarters, and I told them that I was going to be delivering this package and this photo, and they assured me that they would arrive on his desk. So we've initiated the contact process, but I've already talked to his head of research.
Okay, so he hasn't seen them yet, but it's in progress.
Yes, and as a matter of fact, I called him this afternoon. I called him this afternoon, and I left him a message. I go, Mr. Bigelow, I'm going to be on the Kevin Smith Show today, and I'm going to be in Canada with Robert McConnell discussing these photos that your research, the head of SIP research, has already evaluated and told him to give him a call with a test date. And so talking to Robert Bigelow is very difficult. Everything has to go through this head of research thing that he has going on.
Mm-hmm.
So you've already done that. So, but I was going to surprise everyone on the show with this a little later, but since you've already asked. If we can, let's finish with SETI. And then after we finish discussing SETI, which should take about 15, 20 minutes, we'll jump into what's going on with Robert Bigelow. How's that sound?
That sounds good. We have a break coming up in a little bit less than a minute. Let me do this. You also, and this will kind of introduce something we can touch on a little bit in this second hour as well. You also have spent time with the Disclosure Project folks, as you mentioned earlier. And when you mentioned it, we were moving at a pretty fast clip through some other material and kind of glossed over that. So I want to go back and pick up that information as well on the other side of this break.
Okay, great.
Okay. All right, folks, we are into a break within 10 seconds or so. There it is. And on the other side of this break, we'll continue with Ben Woods. All right, we are back, and my guest this evening is Ben Woods, Colonel X, so named, actually, I think, by the editor of UFO Magazine, right?
That is correct.
Yeah. Okay, so now you were talking about SETI, and you wanted to wrap up with that. So
yeah, we could do 20 minutes. It's, well, have you ever heard of the Are We Alone radio program hosted
yeah.
by Dr. Seth Sosek?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, have you ever listened to it?
I don't listen to anybody's radio show, not even mine. I work 100 hours a week.
Well, they're over there, they're very interested in determining what is the engineering and science behind the intelligence with the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. What does the creature look like that sends out this radio signal that they spent all these millions and millions of dollars looking for? What does anything look like that this being that is sending this radio signal that they're looking for look like? They're in agreement that there is at least one civilization out there, but like myself, he is not hopeful that they will be landing anytime soon. But he's very interested. They are very interested in the purpose of their visits out there. If you listen to their show and. If they can get to see one of the saucers, it may give them an idea on how to answer some of these questions. Now, when I take these trips out here, they're a little expensive, but when evidence is in demand, like by people like with people like Dr. Seth Shostak and Robert Bigelow, which it is now, taking the chance to go out is a little worth it. So I've been receiving mixed reviews, but on these expeditions we've taken two this summer so far, and we have a two planned that are coming up. We get about 12 good shots on each trip out there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not all 12 go to Dr. Shostak. I'm keeping a separate folder to turn over to Robert Bigelow, Bigelow Aerospace Advanced Space Studies Group, and like I said, we'll be discussing that probably in the second part of this hour. And when we save these photographs, you just don't save them, you know, just, you know, like a photo. They're saved using a system called FITS. Or file image transport system, which is what is used by astronomers to save photographs at the observatories, and it's promoted by the American Astronomical Society. It's how they like it. And we have a couple of the photos posted on the website at www.secretetsaucers.com and on the mini-DV digital download. And on May 28th of this year, just when the weather started clearing, we kicked the summer off with a hit at the site approximately 35 miles southeast of the test range, and I immediately labeled the first shot for Dr. Shostak and used it for a report later that I also sent to Robert Bigelow's person. And while the saucer was turning before it faded out of view back into the test range, we put an iris into the tracking equipment and were able to get some shots of how ET may actually be building a disc. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see how Dr. Shostak handles this information. And but I'll keep you up to date on it. Have you ever do you heard of a FITS file at all? Do you follow that at all?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you got the FITS files. And again, you can see the photos on the website, and they're discussed on the mini DVD.
Okay, now you made a statement I want to ask you about. You said that in talking about Shostak and his group, you said, like me, they're not very hopeful that E.T. is going to be landing anytime soon. Why is that? Why do you not think that that will happen?
I don't think it's going to happen because it would... Well, do you remember that question you had asked me on the last show? You had asked a question, and I think that question was... and it surprised me that you'd asked that question because you don't know how critical... to the country, that question is. And you asked, do you know of any operations that the government is doing to where they stage a UFO incident? Do you remember that question?
Yeah, false flag.
Okay. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I had go, you know what, it's funny that you would ask that. And because I had heard of something like that go on. And, you know, in one of my activities, like over the course of the 10 months since our last interview, I went to go investigate that question, and I found the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what the answer is?
What is the answer?
The answer is they do stage those, and you know why they stage them?
Why?
To rate the response of the American people and to determine what effects on the security infrastructure a real event would actually have.
Mm-hmm.
That's
so are you of the opinion that ETs, actual ETs, have never landed on Earth?
Oh, no. My opinion is, after hearing that, I knew what had happened from my end. I knew why he wasn't landing, why it wasn't landing, because they're not allowing it to land because of the effect on the security infrastructure that it would have, and also because the effect it would have on the American people if something like this landed, so they don't allow it to land, is what I'm coming to conclude over here.
Yeah, but see, here's the deal. Let's say that E.T. is not landing because of the fears of our various governments. Let me put it that way, because we have an audience around the world. So if our various governments have fears over the reaction of the people.
That's exactly right.
Okay. As far as the people are concerned, it doesn't matter if it's E.T., or if it's a false flag, it still looks like E.T. And so that means that the governments are instilling that same fear that they're keeping the E.T.s from instilling.
Yes, exactly. But with this staged landing scenario that you had brought up, they're actually they're measuring I don't know exactly what they're doing. I know about what they're doing. When they stage the incident, and I was able to find out one of the incidents that was staged, but I can't talk about it. But the incident staged, and they rate the effect it has on the media, and then they rate the effect it has on the people, and then after the staging, they do exactly what everyone knows that they do. They come out and say, "Oh, it was a false alarm,"
mm-hmm.
and for everyone to calm down, it's over before the reaction goes critical.
I don't need to run tests. I can tell you, and I can hit it right on target. First of all, the media is going to ignore it and laugh at it and ridicule it. Major media will. Any reporter that takes it seriously is going to find themselves a journalist without a journal. And that's happened repeatedly. People who see it are going to have two responses. One of two responses. One is they're going to report it to MUFON or to some similar organization, or they're going to shut up about it and not talk about it because they don't want to be ridiculed. So that's already predetermined. They're wasting their time, and they've got really bad script writers for their cover stories.
Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to let you know that I mm-hmm. did go over that question because it was very interesting that you'd asked that, because I knew there was something behind it, and now I know what it is. But it's a SETI Are We Alone exclusive as far as this craft turning around and shooting off back into the Nellis Range. There's a structural characteristic that came out when we use the iris, and what irises are used for is you place them into cameras when there's too much light and you're able to resolve and get a better depth of field and get a better image when you put irises in. So I told the photographer, put an iris into the telescope and let's see what we can see. And we found that at the rear of the engine by the tips, there is a stacked pair of exhaust or engine parts. And we're wondering if this is an ET design, and is it being reverse engineered? And you can see it at www.secretetsaucers.com. And the photos are appearing all over the Internet, such as UFOExaminer.com, Filer's Files. It's also going on AboveTopSecret.com. It's not like I don't have enough to do, but I sent them an email to invite their research team if they wanted to send a project investigator out at AboveTopSecret.com, because they're a pretty big site. I think they're number mm-hmm. one as far as reporting things like this. So I said, if you're going to talk about me over there, and you can send the guy out. I'll treat them. I'll let them see something when I go out there. But they're going to really have to adhere to a tight schedule if they're going to go try and see it. Now, when we did this with the Disclosure Project in the summer of 2007, they did not, again, agree that this disc was of extraterrestrial origin. Now, he's a very good scientist, Dr. Stephen Greer. And so just because someone shows him a saucer, unlike the eyewitnesses that report that the aliens are here, he says, doesn't mean they're extraterrestrial origin just because it's there. So the staff of the Disclosure Project was leaning towards it as being an ARV or alien reconstructed vehicle. And it was built from crash parts or reassembled as best they could. But
now, did they actually see the craft?
Pardon?
Did they actually see the craft?
Yes. Mm-hmm. They saw it and photographed it, and they took a total of 18 photos. And I wish I had them, but I was only able to keep one. But it was an exciting experience. But they think it's an ARV, and so that concluded their NELIS test range report. But after I saw this, and this is on May 28th, and these photos have been sent, an example photo has been sent, and I've requested the Dr. Shostak get back to me and let me know if he wants me to take more of these type of photos where we get the rear of the craft and we see these engine parts, because I know that's what he's looking for. He's looking for technology representative of extraterrestrial intelligence. When I saw that, I go, you know what? We don't build the things like that. So I sent it in, and after seeing it, I spent some time out at McCarran Airport and studied jets there to see, you know, how our engineers were putting these engines onto our jet wings. Yep, and they're different. ET's doing it different. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering what type of aeronautical advantage ET gets by placing engines on top of each other rather than side by side. So it's something that we're going to be hearing about. But UFO Examiner did a fine job getting the story right, and they put their photos on the website, and I was going to write the editor. And
well, obviously, if it's ET, whoever it is, and whatever kind of engines they are, they're not jet engines because they make no sound.
That's right. So I was able to get a photo over that to SETI, and you're on the top of my mailing list, by the way, Mr. Smith, for whatever he says, and I'll let you know what he says about that. And if he gives me the go-ahead to really get some really better photos of that particular part, or if he wants to see it himself, we'll find out.
All right. Now, what do you expect? I mean, I don't know. Maybe this question cannot be answered. But with Robert Bigelow, I mean, look, Robert Bigelow has been involved in the ET phenomena, the question, for quite some time. He's been interested in it. He's interested in space. He's putting lots of dollars, millions of dollars, into developing possible space travel. I think at this moment he's got at least one orbiting, inflatable space station that was put up as a test. So as he looks at all of this, what do you sort of expect will be the direction he might take with this?
Well, we can come back to say, we can start talking about Robert Bigelow right now. Well, Mr. Bigelow, most people who look for UFOs in Nevada know who he is. Like you said, he used to oversee NIDS, the National Institute for Discovery Science, that used to be over there on Tropicana. Mm-hmm. He then started the Bigelow Aerospace Corporation and sent modules into space, like you said, worked with the Russians, and now he has the Bigelow Aerospace Advanced Space Studies Group, which he's stocking with new scientists and engineers, and he's hiring a very large group of people over there.
And he has built a space station, has he not? A spaceport?
Yeah, he's got a couple of things up there. But these engineers are being hired to track down innovative flight technologies, presumably from ET craft. Would you like to add anything to that statement?
Well, that would presume that they have some access to ET craft.
Well, sometimes back, the Bigelow Aerospace Corporation and Robert Bigelow met with the staff at the Mutual UFO Network and formed what they call SIP. Have you heard anything about this?
I have heard of SIP. I don't have any details.
Okay. Well, SIP stands for Star Impact Project. It's a special branch of MUFON funded by Robert Bigelow. They have primary objectives, which are: the first one, and this is what I think going to answer your question, is to determine whether rapidly deployed paid field personnel with the right skills and equipment can significantly improve MUFON's collection of UFO data and get us closer to understanding the UFO phenomenon. Did you get all that?
Got it.
Okay. Now, the other objective, and this one is obviously the brainchild of Robert Bigelow, and defines his whole program. The SIP data that is collected from extraterrestrial incidents will be shared with Bigelow Aerospace Advanced Space Studies, with the goal of Mr. Bigelow achieving breakthroughs in commercial technologies, which means it's a reverse engineering facility. It means the technology that he gets from these incidents is brought to Bigelow to where he reverse engineers it into a commercial technology that he can use. So what I did on June 22nd, I relabeled one of the photos we collected for Dr. Shostak and sent it over to the SIP headquarters over at MUFON to see what they'd say. Now, the SIP office out of MUFON doesn't take a look at all of the things that get sent over there. I don't know if you know anything about how they do this. All the reports turn to MUFON. There's a SIP operator who's responsible for filtering all incoming MUFON reports for those that meet the criteria for SIP field deployment and evaluation by Bigelow, of course, in the end. They do everything by the valet classification system. Do you know anything about this?
Yeah, I do. But go ahead.
Okay, so everything's done by valet or the valet classification system. And I have, let's see, laying around here, I have the classification system sheet with me. It's around here somewhere. Do you know the classification system at all?
I've read it, but I read incessantly, so there's no way I could possibly quote it to you.
Okay, that's fine. I have a copy of it here. I was going to put it on the website for the listeners so they could follow along, but I didn't want to step too much into this field without getting everyone on deck with this. And but there are cases, and they have them listed as Category 1, Category 2, Category 3, Category 4, and Category 5. And it's a rating from 1 to 5, where 1 is a mild sighting, and then it goes to 2, 3, 4, 5, and 5 is a lasting injury where ET actually cut you or hurt you. And you can have an anomaly, a flyby, a maneuver, or a close encounter. Mm-hmm. And each one of those is labeled 1, 2, 3, or 4 in severity. So what the SIP dispatch operator does, who's responsible for filtering all the incoming reports, is they look for Class 2 and Class 3 cases, which means if it's a Class 2, it has physical effects associated with it. And if it's a Class 3, then living entities are associated with it. And if you don't have something like that going on, then you're not going to get talked to Bigelow.
Mm-hmm.
So they're only interested in what valet coded as Class 2 or Class 3 with physical evidence. So I labeled the report. I put the report and I go, U.S. Air Force disc being tested outside of Las Vegas as a possible project for SIP. And I have a copy of the report here, and you can see it on the online at MUFON in their members area. And I'll read it here very quickly to give them an idea. So I didn't tell them it was SETI's photo, by the way, or mm-hmm. Dr. Shostak's Are We Alone SETI Progress photo. I just sent the photo in, and I go, here's a photo from Colonel X. I go, check it out, let me know what you guys think. So here's the report. I'll read it very quickly. It says, my name is Ben Woods. I've been published in both magazines and online as having access to where and when the U.S. Air Force secretly test flies their ET disc. On a recent expedition taken May 28th, we collected enough images to submit to the Star Impact Project. I've included one of the photos in the attachment, and some additional information has been posted at my website. I used to post research results during correspondence with ufologists on my mailing list. During this incident, I positioned at an observing location just outside of Las Vegas with a photographer and portable observatory. The photo camp includes tracking cameras, tracking telescopes, 3.2 gigahertz CPUs, and 19-inch monitors. We waited at 5:30 a.m. The scheduled test time just came around. It had several unique flight characteristics that can be seen during the test. The major action or motion that can be observed as hover flight also exhibited zigzag motion, nothing like conventional flight. I'm available now to accommodate and discuss research objectives. MUFON and SIT may have. Now, I had contacted Mr. Carrion last month, and he had been waiting for confirmation of my information. So I sent all that in, all right, and wow, boy, did I get a response on my website. It's report number 1704. Now, the photo that was submitted with this report is on the website and was taken at 5:40 a.m. on May 28th, and the number next to the photo is the number of the report reviewed by the SIP head of research, and I have my webpage open. to the site. And the report number, again, is 17607. So the UFO organization took the Colonel X Dr. Shostak photograph and posted it in their members area. And next thing I knew, I had the MUFON community all over the website at secretetsaucers.com. And I remember when I was on your program last November, I had a website counter. Now when this UFO research organization put this up, I received three times as many visitors than when I was on your show, and that's a lot of traffic.
Mm-hmm.
So I woke up on the 23rd, the day after I submitted the report, and the MUFON Bigelow SIP dispatch operator had me answer some additional questions to verify if it could be considered as the Class 1, Class 2. And one of the questions was, did the object land or affect in some way the immediate physical environment? And I answered them. And did any of the witnesses experience one or more of the following during or after the event? Observation of beings or entities, wounds or trauma to the body of unknown origin, or taken on board? So they asked that, and I answered everything for them. And again, he was trying to determine if this particular proposed project, as titled, would satisfy any of the requirements put down by the SIP, and it only took a couple of minutes before he wanted me to discuss everything I could deliver and what I had to the SIP head of investigations, Richard Lang. And he's a real intelligent individual with a good head on his shoulders, and I had never heard of him, though. Have you ever heard of him, Richard Lang?
Yes.
You've heard of him?
I've heard the name, yes.
Okay, I've never heard of him. But
well, I've talked to a lot of people inside a lot of the organizations that you mentioned.
Uh-huh.
And in some cases, I've had some of those people as guests. In some cases, I was not talking to them as guests, but to get confirmation of something. So, yeah, I've heard a lot of the names and a lot of the terms.
Okay. Well, okay. He's a pretty guard guy. I was thinking, you know, when I with the SIP head of investigations, I didn't know who I was going to be talking to. But with Bigelow and the amount of money he had, I thought I was going to be talking to Albert Einstein, you know what I mean? With this much money and this much stuff going on over UFOs, I knew I was going to be talking to someone big.
Mm-hmm.
But he's pretty smart, and he told me the law of the land that they have down there. Well, before I go on with this.
Well, listen, just to warn you, we're 30 seconds away from our next break. So,
okay, well, let's go to break, and then we'll continue with this Bigelow. We'll close up with some more SETI, and we'll see what you want to.
Yeah, I got a couple of questions I want to ask you when we come back from the break, and I think it'll be pretty interesting. All right, we're going to step away, ladies and gentlemen, for just a couple of minutes here for a break, and when we come back, we'll continue with Ben Woods, Colonel X, and we'll be talking more about this amazing vehicle, craft, that he has seen and has photographed, and we'll be talking about his involvement with it. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Ben, I've got a quick question for you before we proceed. Two quick questions.
Sure.
All right. The first one is, how do you know when these tests are going to happen?
How do I know when these tests are going to happen? Well, that is a question I had to answer for the SIP head of research also. And they wanted to know, how do I know when this shows up and I come up with all these photos? How come you can get these photos and no one else out there is getting these photos? What is going on? You have an insider, and I do. And how I get these is without revealing too much, because if I tell everybody how I find out about the test, then we could lose this, and I don't want to do that. But I have a person involved with the surveillance radar who is notified that there's going to be an increased amount of security needed on a particular day, and the radar office has to be notified. And that triggers me to go send out my photographers and go turn on the tracking cameras. And That's how we do it.
Okay, second question. Why do you do this? Now,
why do I do
this? All right, now let me refine the question just a little bit.
Okay.
I think virtually everyone who's listening to the Kevin Smith Show would say, well, he does it because it's UFOs and UFOs are interesting. Okay, we're all interested in UFOs here, or most of us are. But let me refine the question. Why do you choose to provide all this information to UFO investigators? So you take it a step farther than most people would take it. Most people would just be thrilled that they got to see the thing, you know, and got to photograph it. But you go a step further, and you're taking it to serious investigators, and that's the question. Why do you do this?
Well, I'm an American through and through, and I wasn't always interested in UFOs. That's why I bring it up that in 2007 is when I got started, and I've been working on this 23 months. When I seen it up there, I just thought of all the people that it's hurt. And if the aliens are inside, all them running around our country getting away with all but murder, and then they come back here and they park their craft, and then they go back out at night and do their little abductions, I don't appreciate that at all. And I thought I could do something about it, and I've done a little bit about it, and now I've got the big researchers involved, or I'm getting them involved, and I'd like to see these aliens brought to justice. Is where I'm at with it.
Okay, now have you ever received any sort of harassment, or has anyone ever sort of sent you a message that the so-called powers that be are not pleased?
Yeah, not yet, but like I said, I had contacted the FBI with this like the first week I knew this was going to when I seen it. I knew this was going to happen to me. I come out to Nevada. I knew this was going to happen. I was going to see this creature or something was going to happen at my post, and it did. But I called the FBI and got and tried to get them involved very quickly, so I felt pretty safe from there. But poor Rob Simone over at robsimone.com, he was one of the first people that had requested to interview me after this. And we were getting everything ready for the interview. And he goes, okay, well, I'll see you tomorrow. Go ahead and give me a call. And I go, okay, I'll give you a call, and we'll get started with this. And he sent me an email the next day, and he says, believe it or not, I have been attacked by a black van. This is my first attack, and they used EM weapons on me. And I go, you got to be kidding. And he goes, it's all because of talking to you. And I go, oh, well, there goes that. And he was unable to do the show because he was notifying all of his people, is how he termed it, that something had happened to him like this. He called it the worst attack using EM weapons that he had ever experienced. He now knows what they're all about. And I thought that was very that was neat.
What sort of physical symptoms did he have?
He didn't tell me. He just wrote it up like that in the email, and I called him, and he said he was very scared and frightened for his life. And that he wanted to rest for a little while. I go, okay, that's fine. Call me when you get a chance. Sorry for bothering you. But the UFO business is a little dangerous, but that's pretty much the only experience that I had. Sometimes I think people are following me, but, you know, I shake it off. It's just something that you kind of got to get used to, I guess. But where I'm at with it, and I know it's come across, and I'm glad it has, is I've been on this 23 months, and I want it to end. And by bringing in these other researchers, and I have one new topic that I'm going to talk about before we leave here tonight. So I got the big three here, and we may be doing something about this this month or next month. And I call it it's a disclosure strategy that we're trying to follow. And I do touch upon it on the mini DVD digital download that is also available at the website.
Okay, what's the new topic?
Well, the topic was that we just got finished with Richard Lang. And before I go on with this, I logged on to Netscape to see if there was any news. This was the day I was about to talk to Richard Lang, and the day after I had submitted the report, and typed in the keyword Colonel Wax, and it was just the same stuff that usually is listed. And then I typed in secretetsaucers.com, which is what I filed the report with using that website. And blam, I was all over the internet. It's what I had expected by posting something like this. I didn't know where it was, but I knew it was somewhere, and by using secretetsausage.com, the pages began filling up with information. Rents.com, MySpace was listed, and they post my research comments over there at Rents.com on his MySpace. I get to post there whenever I want, throw ads on there. And I was all over Filer's Files and UFO Examiner, like I mentioned earlier, and Above Top Secret, and there was a host of others. I don't want to bore you too much with this internet activity and discussions, but I'd like to get back to the question, to what extent have you involved Robert Bigelow on getting his hands on the disc, which I think would finalize this whole scenario that we have out here. So I sent Dr. Shostak's photo to Robert Bigelow's program at MUFON for a preliminary evaluation. And after a couple of emails and a discussion with the dispatch operator, he had the head of the SIP Bigelow Research Unit on the telephone. So I tell him, I go, this is Colonel X. They call me Colonel X Ben Woods, and why they call me Colonel X, and I've been out here 23 months. And I had a research agenda that I was going to be following for the end of the summer, and I heard about the SIP program. And I can't, there are certain instruments that you use when you come out and do your research. I know I won't be able to get you the radiation readings or the prints on the ground you're looking for landing, but I can get you other types of readings, and I discussed those with him, and he was very excited. So he wants to know what type of lead time, just like you asked, that I have for something like this. How long does he have to get the guys out here? And I told him I could give him about a 72-hour lead time. So he pre-approved me for the program and said, when I have the type flight test, just give him a call. And I'd been talking with James Carrion about this since early May, and we've exchanged a couple of emails, and he had some legal problems with it. He did not want to involve MUFON on anything illegal that would get them in trouble with the government. No climbing over barbed wire to get a look. No research on restricted land, et cetera. So he said the project qualified. The evidence looked good, and he was willing to get involved and would proceed if I would supply him with classified documents, which MUFON's legal department would like to have, and what those documents related to. I'm going to keep those private for now. So the photos passed, the project passed, the research standards that they had, and I suggested that there were, again, a few other types of readings that could be taken at the site, but I wanted to talk to Bigelow before I did one more darn thing, especially handing over to Carrion classified documents. So what we're now doing with the pre-approved evidence is loading the file. Like I said, when we go out on the expedition, I have one file for Bigelow's group that we'll be sending over, his corporate office on Eastern Avenue, and I have one file dedicated to Dr. Shostak. And I've called the secretary over at Bigelow's office, and she said she would accept the package on behalf of Mr. Bigelow and get it to his office. And I called him this afternoon and left a message to listen in on the show, and we'd be talking about him. So this is what officially we have going on so far, is having Mr. Bigelow's Bigelow Aerospace Advanced Space Studies ET Evidence Group getting their hands on the disc. So what part one of our disclosure strategy this summer is, how could disclosure be achieved using Robert Bigelow and the Bigelow Aerospace Advanced Space Studies engineers, and how do we accomplish this? So the procedure we're working on is a simple three-step process. Step one, introduce what Colonel X can deliver and determine if the evidence and data collected is good enough to be considered for Robert Bigelow. And step two would be meet with the engineers of the Bigelow Aerospace Advanced Space Studies Group and get them outfitted so they can track the disc on their own. And step three, give Bigelow a test date and let him see the saucer. So far we complete step one and have initiated step two, and we've already contacted their headquarters and were promised the evidence package would be delivered to Mr. Bigelow when it was ready. This would leave step three, which is to give Bigelow a test date and let him see the saucer. The problem with this strategy is it looks great to people like Steve Greer, Steve Bassett, and the other disclosure proponents, but there, like you just brought up, is risk with doing something like this. There are government departments that are set up to stop things like this.
We hear, and I don't know if it's true, we hear that there is a mood of pro-disclosure within the halls of government. We hear that at the same time there are those that oppose that idea, but that there is some movement toward disclosure. Well, what do you think? Where's the government on this? Is the government going to go pro-disclosure on this, or are they going to continue
I know they are going to. Let me put it this way. We can do this scenario. Let's say I get this done with Bigelow or Dr. Shostak or this third entity that I'm about to bring up.
All right.
Towards the end of the show. Let's say I do this. This is real. This is really going on. We really have it going on. It's really on the website. It's on the mini DVD. I hope everyone can pick it up and just check some of it out. Let's say I get Robert Bigelow out here, and he comes out and sees the disc, and he brings his engineers, and he brings better equipment, he brings in better optics, better cameras, better CCDs, everything, and the show goes on. What do you think the government's going to do? They're going to lock us up. I've seen this in some of Dr. Shostak's report. He worries, too, about if he finds something, is SETI going to be shut down if they found something, just like in the movies. They come in, they lock all the doors, they take the signal, they shut the computers down. You know, that is what I think is going to be going on this month or next month, to tell you the truth.
You think they are going to try and lock it down?
I think that if I take some one of these guys out there, that the vans are going to come out and they're going to shut the media down for a little while, and they're going to talk to us about what's going on and ask us for some personal to follow some gag orders and things like that. I mean, I'm not going to do it. I mean, once one of these guys sees it, I know that I'm going to be financially secure for the rest of my life and finally get out of this.
All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, we'll just have a few minutes left, and you can share with us what that new idea is. We'll be back, folks, right after this. We are back. If I don't knock the microphone over, we'll get through the rest of this show. oh, my goodness. Well, I am a little clumsy sometimes. All right. My guest this evening, Ben Woods, also known as Colonel X. Ben, is Ben Woods your real name?
Ben Woods is my real ufologist name. That's what I use. And but everyone just calls me Colonel X. I kind of enjoy that a little bit, and but I'm having the new researchers and the new third entity that I'm going to be able to get out here before we close is during all the hoopla here over the release of the SETI Are We Alone radio program photographs and their appearance on the internet. I've been contacted by a new and interested media group. Media with enough power and influence to make an impact with what we're able to deliver here. There were some people from overseas, the usual editors from magazines, and I have a interested reporter from Spain that's going to be here on the 28th who wants me to take him out and show him some stuff. We may be doing an article. But the really biggie that came in was an affiliate of ABC News has contacted me and wants to know more about what's going on out here and what I would like to discuss. And I think it may be the start of this summer's disclosure event for Colonel X, and we're very excited. The media is taking a more serious interest in the disc after this. So as a result, we went back to the chalkboard and maybe lining up a test date to be seen on ABC. It was what Steve Greer had initially wanted back when we were working in 2007. And I wasn't ready to do something like that then, but I am now. And so those are our three new researchers out here in Nevada, and that's what's going on.
All right. The natural follow-up to all of this, then, is, okay, once one of these three happens as you want it to, what's next for you?
What's next for me is I've come to terms. One of the things that I've been having to deal with is it's been, you know, it was fun. You know, in the summer of 2007, Colonel X doing this, Colonel X doing that, and working with Disclosure and remaining anonymous, it was fun. and you know, being in magazines and online. But with something like this, this is getting a little more serious. It's a whole new game, and it's coming to terms with actually maybe being discovered doing this. But I'm hoping that I've been reassured by a couple of the organizations that if anything happens, anything at all, they have enough people that support them for something like this. That's what the whole organization was for. You know, what the disclosure organizations, they've all got this lineup of heavy-hitting attorneys to protect witnesses, to protect people that supply them with stuff. And when this happens, either this month or next month, I have enough support that I think that I'll come out of this all right. I don't think I'll look too bad, but yeah, it's coming to terms with being discovered.
I'm sure that you're familiar with Robert Dean, Command Sergeant Major Robert Dean. Now, he's been making disclosure openly, publicly, and blatantly for a number of years, and he said that no one has ever bothered him.
Yeah, so. Exactly. The thing is, you don't get bothered really too much with this stuff. I mean, I've done some exploration on the subject, and they don't really bother you too much. But when you start getting on to the news and you start talking about government, that's when they start coming down on you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm prepared for this, and I'll see how it turns out.
You know, about the only thing I ever say about the government in relationship to all of this, I say, number one, if there is a need for a cover story, okay, we can understand cover stories. That's not a big deal. We know there are lots of cover stories. But the only bad thing I ever say about them is, for Christ's sake, get better script writers and use cover stories that at least make some sense.
Yeah, I love this guy. The last thing I would want is something to happen to this country. But, you know, that's about it. I don't talk about the country in general. I just talk about, sometimes I refer to this program as cancerous, infamous.
There you go. You can hear it. Well, someone decided that our guest had said enough, I guess. But we'll see if we can. We just have a few minutes left. We'll see if we can get him back on and try to finish out the show. Maybe it was something I said. You know? Who knows? Maybe it was something I said. Well, the call's not going through. I don't know. It's just ringing now, so I don't know. That is so weird. Well, I guess it was to be expected. All right. Caller, can you hear me? And we cannot hear that caller. Is that weird?
Hello.
Yep, there we go. I guess we got a little too close to something a little bit sensitive.
Okay. Anyway, as I was saying, last thing I would do is talk about this country. I love it here. I don't want anything bad to happen to it. But I know this alien thing is going to do something, and I hope they just don't hold me responsible. But what I was going to ask you, I thought for sure this was going to go up Bush disclosure. I don't know why. Some people thought Clinton disclosure. I thought Bush disclosure because I'm right here with this thing flying around. But it looks like it's going to be Obama disclosure.
Or maybe not. I mean, you know, we have seen with administration after administration, we've seen predictions one after the other that disclosure is just around the corner. Uh-huh. And each one, it hasn't happened. And, you know, I'm hoping that President Obama will decide that it's time to do disclosure and that they'll do it. But I am hoping that. I am not hopeful that it will happen. because realistically, I've seen it come and go. Those predictions come and go time and time again. But I'm hoping that that they'll do it. And, you know, there are some people within the administration that we hear are pro-disclosure. So, you know, maybe it will happen.
So, from back to your question, you know, with something like this, aren't you a little scared or whatever? So one of the things that I've been having to come to terms with, too, is, what is the president going to say and who is going to be the president when this thing finally does happen? And I was just thinking, well, it looks like it's going to be Barack Obama. But I was talking to Steve. I wasn't talking to Steve Bass, but I had sent him some email before this thing started rolling out here. And I told him, what if something happened next month? What kind of position are you guys are in? And he was asking, well, what's going to happen? And I told him, well, you know, this saucer's hanging out again. And he jumped right onto it and wants to know everything I could tell him about the specifics mm-hmm. of where this thing is coming from. And it was really interesting. So one of the things I'm doing as I get closer...
I talked with him today, by the way.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, Steve Bassett. Yeah, I talked with him today. He's getting ready, flying out tomorrow to go to Spain. Hey, we've hit the end of the show. Stay on the line with me for just a moment. There you have it, folks. That's a wrap. That's the Kevin Smith Show for tonight. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.